Hello, I'm Luke Halpern from Pharmacy Times, and you're listening to Pharmacy Focus. The Pharmacy Times Pharmacy Focus podcast provides the latest industry news and information, thought leader insights, clinical updates, patient counseling tools, and innovative solutions for the everyday practice and business of pharmacy.
Today, we're joined by Dr. Jacinda Abdul-Mudakabir, also known as Dr. Jam, to discuss her upcoming presentation on respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, at the 2026 American Pharmacists Association annual meeting in Los Angeles. Jacinda, thank you so much for being here today. I know you wear multiple hats, so if you could just please introduce yourself to the audience and let them know the work that you do across pharmacy.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Jacinda Abdul-Mudakabir, or JAM. Feel free to refer to me as JAM. I am an associate professor at the University of California, San Diego, in the SCAS School of Pharmacy and Pharmaceutical Sciences, as well as in the Division of the Black Diaspora and African American Studies. I'm an infectious diseases researcher. Antimicrobial resistance is my focus. And I also go ahead and investigate inequities in AMR and use preventative strategies like vaccines to mitigate those inequities. And finally, I am also the associate editor of Pharmacy Practice in Focus Health Systems. So I'm so happy to be here with Luke and so happy to join Pharmacy Times for this conversation.
And we're very happy to have you as well, Dr. Jam. Thank you again for taking the time. So like I mentioned, you'll be at APHA this weekend. The conference begins on March 27th, but you'll be giving your presentation on Saturday, March 28th, like we talked about earlier, bright and early at 6 a.m. Pacific time. And you'll be giving a presentation on RSV titled RSV in Focus, Pharmacists Driving Vaccine Access, Confidence, and Education. So just to give our audience a little overview, could you briefly explain what you'll be tackling in your presentation?
Right. Thank you so much for priming the presentation up. It is at 6 a.m. So if you all are early birds, unlike me, I would love to see you all there. It'll also be available via an enduring credit following the presentation. And it will also, if you don't have to be signed up for the meeting to attend, and you can also attend from your bedroom if you would like to. So just those small things.
Very
for the
convenient.
Presentation. Yes. So if you want to join from your PJs, you can do that. But I wish I could join with my PJs on. No, I'm kidding. But what we'll be talking about is just an overview of RSV, an overview of the burden of RSV. Who are those individuals that are most at risk? So we'll really be focusing on our older adults. I've been told by our more senior community that they do not like to be called senior or elderly. So I say seasoned because I am respectful. And we will also be talking about the available vaccines for RSV, how they work, the existing real world evidence that we have for those vaccines. And then we'll be wrapping it up talking about the importance of pharmacists in this space. And I'll actually be providing some insights from my last year's intervention that I do. I do community-based work. And we actually had RSV as our focal disease last year for our intervention. And I'll be talking a little bit about what we were able to uncover during that intervention, and then how it is that other pharmacists can adapt our findings and what we did to their own practice. So I'm really excited for that conversation, and more excited to be doing it with a great friend of mine, Dr. Richard Dang, who is really well known throughout APHA and in pharmacy, and is really such a leader in the vaccine space.
Yeah, it's definitely a super important topic, especially as RSV is getting further recognition in recent years as vaccines and monoclonal antibody treatments for the virus have been approved and vaccine guidelines are increasingly incorporating RSV prevention into their recommendations. Unfortunately, it remains a leading cause of infant hospitalization and a significant cause of severe infection in adults aged over 60. So many people still think of RSV, despite the impact to older adults, as primarily a pediatric disease. What do pharmacists need to understand about the adult RSV burden?
Really great question, Luke. And I agree. I always have to say, you know, like this is not just something that impacts our little babies. We do see it across the lifespan. And what I use as a community education tool is something that we can just think about as scientists, pharmacists. We are scientists. So one thing that I say is, you know, as you age, or I say, like, you know, My dad would always tell me, the older you get, your body just doesn't work the same way that it used to. And that's how we have to think about our immune systems. The older that we get, our immune systems don't function in the same capacities as they used to when we were younger. And scientifically, we call this immunosenescence. So that means that, we have a reduction in the immune protection. And that's because immune protection, while we hope that it would last forever, the lifespan of individuals is also increasing. We are now in such a different place in the world where the individuals that are 65 plus is now outpacing any other age group. So that
Sure.
means that we are an aging population. So with that reduction in immunity to those pathogens that we were exposed to as little babies, that's why we have to think about things like vaccines so that we can reintroduce those past viruses to our bodies and make that immune protection. And it can be long lasting for this later half of our lives.
Yeah, that's an excellent explanation. And like you mentioned, you have a firsthand perspective in community pharmacy, and you've led countless immunization campaigns, you've conducted thorough research into vaccine hesitancy, misinformation, and barriers to vaccination across age groups. So, in your experience, what barriers to RSV vaccination are you most seeing in community pharmacy? And how can pharmacists work together to adequately address these concerns?
So, Luke, I will tell you what really blew my mind is so in our intervention, my husband, who is a he's a software engineer who's now crossing over into the public health space, but he's become my statistician and honestly my go-to when it comes to our data synthesis and so on. And I think what's so interesting from our findings, especially as he goes through and now completes our statistical analyses, is the fact that people were unaware that the vaccine existed in the first place.
Wow.
So we do a pre and post survey before and after our education session, and then we provide vaccinations. And what we saw were that 68% of the individuals that participated in our education had not received any insights into the RSV vaccine. The
That's
bulk of our
staggering.
attendees, isn't it? The bulk of our attendees were 65 plus. So more than 60% of the folks there were within that age group, where we would really, really be pushing for those vaccines. And not only that, more than 50% of them had at least one chronic disease that made them eligible for the vaccine, that made them more likely to experience RSV. And then another thing that we found was just kind of the knowledge around the risk for the RSV virus. So it's so many people were for RSV itself. So many people are unaware of those things that put them at risk, like the chronic comorbidity burden, like the fact that they may just be aging and it's a byproduct of aging. But folks didn't know that. Folks were not aware of the recommendations, of the vaccine, the fact that it was recommended for those individuals that are 50 and older with at least one chronic illness, and then those individuals that are 75 plus. So it was the lack of the knowledge of the recommendation. Excuse me, the lack of the knowledge of the existence of the vaccine, and then that lack of the knowledge of the risk factors for actually the virus itself. So if you don't know that a vaccine exists, and if you don't think that you're at risk for the virus, why would you think to get a vaccination for it?
Yeah, exactly.
So, like that was kind of the biggest barrier that we saw for RSV. And it was so like alarming to me because so many folks came up to me after the fact and they're like, I have a PCP. I see my PCP every year and they never, recommended this vaccine to me. I had one guy, he was like, I'm a veteran. I can't believe, that my provider wouldn't pull out all the stops to help me and give me what it is that I need for maximal survival. So one other thing that I kind of noted was that feeling of betrayal. So I think as healthcare providers, we can't make our assumptions, about how it is that people are going to interact with the healthcare system. We can't keep our own fears for maybe a difficult conversation. We can't let that keep us from making that recommendation. So here's the thing. Previous years, we would partner, my husband and I, with the county of and the community org that we work with. We would partner with the county of San Bernardino to bring vaccinations. They're limited, and it's typically like a nurse ran team. They're limited in the vaccines that they can bring. They can only bring those that are offered free at the governmental level. So COVID-19 at that time and flu. Well, times changed and they lost that funding, and then we had to, find other folks to participate. And thank God for friends, right, that are community pharmacists. So, with me being more research focused, I forget about the capacities that we exist as pharmacists. And, thank God for community pharmacists and our independent pharmacies, really. So, I ended up making a call on LinkedIn. It was a call of desperation. And I asked for, my community colleagues if they could support me in this. We had one pharmacy come out, and they have been spectacular. It's the best partners I could ever ask for, ABC Pharmacy. And what they do is they actually set up shop. And this is how, like, agile pharmacists are. Like, I'm always so blown away by the ways that we can exist. They can set up shop anywhere. They have such a lean team. It's like three to four of them that come out each and every time. And they run insurance, everything. So what they started to do is they said, well, we're gonna look in our immunization registry, and we're actually gonna figure out all the vaccines that these folks are due for, and we're gonna give them all of them if we can in that session.
That's
And I
incredible.
actually have an education point where I talk about co-administration. So now what we've labeled this is a warm handoff. So I provide the education. And then they look through the immunization registry, and they provide the vaccinations. So we have this amazing pharmacy pharmacist. We have Dr. Amy and then Dr. Sia, and then they Dr. Amy Lay, and so who runs the operation. And so then when we're there, she goes to the registry, and Dr. Sia says, okay, you are due for zoster, you're due for pneumococcal, you're due for COVID, and you're due for flu. We're getting them all here right now. So then she's like, you're ready? And then she gives each and every one. She's jab, 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 jab. We had more than one person receive five vaccines in one sitting. But that's the beauty of pharmacists and the way that we can exist. We can provide education, and we can provide access. And I
Absolutely.
think that, has been such a wonderful way to present pharmacy to the community. I call it a reintroduction of the profession.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good way to coin it. I mean, the education aspect especially is so critical, especially when you mention these survey results when 65 plus percent of individuals have even no idea that the vaccine exists or that they're even at risk. And your presentation that you're going to give on Saturday, it emphasizes these culturally informed care models that they can be used to improve patient communication and education, which ultimately will increase RSV vaccination rates. Why are culturally informed care models particularly important for RSV vaccination in vulnerable populations?
Right, such a great question. Thank you so much, Luke. Well, first and foremost, we have to think about those folks who are most impacted by, respiratory viruses in general, RSV being one of them. When we consider, in the United States and in many parts of the world, race is oftentimes synonymous with class. And that's due to systemic, harms and systemic policies. But when we think about, that intersection of marginalized identities, so now you have, or marginalized groups in general can be synonymous with low class and with social deprivation. So when we think about that, now you have these folks that are going to have these disproportionate or inequities in social determinants of health, meaning that, there will be limitations in health literacy because there are limitations in education. There will be limitations in healthcare access because there are just decreased access points for healthcare access in areas of high vulnerability. There's actually a scientific study that we'll talk through, or Dr. Dang will talk through in the presentation, that show for those individuals that lived in higher quartiles of vulnerability, per the CDC Social Vulnerability Index, which quantifies vulnerability by thematic categories, and they have four quartiles with the highest quartiles corresponding to the most deprivation. They found those individuals that were most deprived were more likely to be represented amongst those diagnosed with RSV. So that then brings us to the point where, who are those folks, or who are representative of those folks that are typically defined by high vulnerability? Those that are racially and ethnically minoritized. those that are older in age. As you get older in age, you're now pushed out of the workforce. Some people don't have savings. They're not able to access that. Some people don't have, access to insurance policies or don't know their insurance policies well enough to know that these vaccines may be provided through Medicare Part B or D so they can get them. So that means that we now have to inform ourselves or who are those groups that are marginalized and be honest with ourselves about the marginalized groups. And then we need to say, okay, these are the folks that we need to make sure that we are at the very least recommending the RSV vaccine, making a strong recommendation. Hey, the RSV vaccine is on the market. I've noted, your comorbidities. We as pharmacists have such a unique window because we can actually see the medications they're being prescribed. We know what they're for, and we can have that time for conversation with that patient to really be able to get to that patient level of like, where are we with health, and what do we need to do here? So I think for me, that's culturally informed care, really being honest about the state of the world, how individuals exist, and how is it that we can, in our roles, make that recommendation. And don't shy away from it for what you think may be a difficult conversation. We have the tools to have that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the honesty is such a big part of it because when you're honest with the patient, it allows you to get the full picture of, why they may not have received a certain vaccine or why they may not have gotten a specific treatment. And it just allows you as the pharmacist to provide better care. So you're absolutely right there.
100%.
And just turning the page a little bit to a slightly related, but different topic, but also just as important, vaccine hesitancy. It also corresponds to the cultural care models, just trying to overcome that mountain of hesitancy that people often exhibit. And it obviously remains very prevalent in our communities, and it's honestly perhaps being mainstreamed by current government leadership at various agencies. And honestly, RSV vaccines have been a particular target in many instances. In this past January, when the US announced a revised childhood vaccine schedule, one that is now being held up in litigation, RSV vaccines were notably not included when they took the vaccines down from 18 to 13 in trying to make it more like Denmark's schedule. So there's obviously a lot of, I know the eye roll. there's obviously a lot of discourse around RSV vaccines and the monoclonal antibodies, and people are hesitant, as they are for all vaccines, honestly. Why, how can pharmacists like appropriately address vaccine hesitancy specific to RSV vaccines, especially among, like you mentioned, there's patients that don't perceive themselves to be high risk. How can you overcome vaccine hesitancy, especially among these patients who may think that they don't need the vaccine?
So for me, the way that I've worked to combat it, and I have to be honest about the fact that I've been with my community since COVID-19. So we've been, working together. This RSV is now the fourth disease that we've worked through together. So they may not be the best model to talk through this with because they've received education, but we do have about 60% of the attendees each year are folks that have never participated in my education sessions before. So we do have them at least to draw this from what I'm going to elaborate on. But one thing that I will say that I lead with facts. I lead with honesty that is just innate to my personality. That's innate to who I am as a clinician. I do not believe that dishonesty drives anything but further distrust. And I want for individuals to know that I am someone they can trust and they can rely on to bring facts forward. That's me. And to me, I think that it has lent itself to the effects that I would have wanted to that I desired, meaning that the community does know that they can trust me. They do trust the information that I bring forth, so much so that they asked me verbatim out of their mouths, are you drawing this information that you're presenting to us? When I went this past year with RSV, this was right in the at the height of the CDC changes. And they were like, are you using primary literature? That's what they asked me. Am I using
Well,
primary
I would
literature?
hope so.
And then they said, and they asked me if I was using that versus, and they were like, we just hope that you're not using the CDC recommendations. While sad, I think that what it unveiled to me though is they were clear of the information that differed from what they had been hearing on a loop for the prior 4 or 3 years that we have been providing education. So I've been in the community since 2021. I have been doing education sessions in the manner that I do them now since 2022. So for them, they were like, oh no, you know, when they saw the changes, they were like, that's not what Dr. Jam says. I'm gonna wait, you know, for her to bring information, and I'm gonna validate that the information that she brings is not this information that I'm hearing over here that's different. So I think, you know, having that trustworthy relationship, and having established that has really kind of set a new dynamic for how the community that I work with engages. And while everyone may not have that to draw from, what you can say and what that model shows is that when you have a sustained commitment to honesty and to providing education, that it can promote change, and it can also gear people to being able to spot the information that's unlike the other, right? Like unlike what they're receiving from a trusted expert. And I think
Exactly.
pharmacists are so uniquely situated in the community to be trustworthy messengers in that way.
Yeah,
But I
definitely.
think too, another layer of just kind of navigating vaccine hesitancy for me, I don't know, like vaccine hesitancy is such an odd place for me because I've seen so many different kind of like presentations of it. But more often than not, it's just a lack of being able to navigate the decision independently that really pushes vaccine hesitancy. That to me has been like the biggest root. Like if I could put together all of my experiences I've had since the pandemic started, it's really kind of like, well, I don't have the expertise to navigate this information, to break it down, to really understand what's happening here, but I'm being told I have to do something, and nobody is willing to give me a straightforward, you know,
Yeah.
answer about how these vaccines work and why they're important and who's the most at risk. So, I found that when I have done that, there have been light bulbs and people have said, ah, this is something I'll consider. No one ever explained it to me in that
It's
way.
all about just explaining it like from a trustworthy face, you know?
Exactly. And I think too, just taking that time to say, hey, this is how this works. You know, I don't want to be forced to do things. So I work hard not to force other people to do
Yeah.
things, you know. And I just think about how is it that I would want to exist in life, and I push that forward. But also too, with vaccine hesitancy, another thing I've learned is one no doesn't mean it's a no forever. I've had people come, so flu and COVID information are post disease states for me, meaning I talk about them every single year, but then I change my focal disease state yearly. So I've done flu, I've done zoster, I've done RSV, and what I've seen with flu is I'll have some people that will say no to flu, or I've had folks that have said no to flu from 2022 until 2024, and then in 2025 they say, all right, now I'm gonna go ahead and get the flu vaccine. So just because someone tells you no in that initial conversation does not mean that it's a no forever. You know, you play that conversation by ear, you continue to bring it up, you know, in ways in which you feel is appropriate to that person that you're interacting with. But a no the first time doesn't mean it's a sustained no.
And it also gives them an opportunity to perhaps just take some more time to learn more about their
Yep.
situation, their circumstance, and then come back a year or so later and say, okay, I realize why I would benefit from this vaccine.
Exactly.
And just giving them the chance, you know, not all just putting a bunch of information at them and say, okay, you have to decide right now, like for the rest of your life, whether you're going to get a vaccine
Exactly. And
forever.
now it's a sustained decision, and they can always
Exactly.
go back to that information that they received and say, you know what? No, like this was worth it when I got it before. It'll be worth it when I get it again. And I think
Yeah.
that's the biggest thing that I always like, you know, really try to promote with my vaccine programs is, you know, I'm here. I'm so happy to be able to go into the community every single year, but there could be a year where we're not able to go back, you know, in the same ways in which we have. And for me, I want them to be able to make decisions about their vaccines and decisions about their health independent of my existence in their lives. So I want them to make sustained, you know, decisions that are help that's helpful to their health. I don't know what'll happen in the world. Should another pandemic arise, I don't want for us to be in the same spot we were, you
Yeah.
know, during
Almost
COVID when it came to vaccine uptake.
like a teacher just teaching, you know, a student, and
Exactly.
then obviously not going to be with that student forever, just giving them the lessons to be able to make good decisions through the rest of your life.
Absolutely,
Yeah.
100%.
I couldn't agree more. So
Shout out to
just
the good teachers I've had in my life that have
yeah.
shown me
Seriously.
the way.
So this whole conversation has gotten me even more excited for your presentation on Saturday morning. So for those listening, just to say it again, it takes place in the JW Marriott Platinum Ballroom at APHA this weekend, again at 6 a.m. So
What are you ultimately hoping that attendees of your presentation take away from it on Saturday morning?
Oh, I hope that you all one stay awake the whole time. No, I'm kidding. But I think what we would really be hoping is just that we are able to identify those that are most at risk. We're able to navigate, how we can develop conversations amongst ourselves as healthcare providers, and then with the community members and the individuals that we want to help along their vaccination journey. And then also, I think too, with me bringing forward the intervention that I do with the amazing community of pharmacists that I work with, I hope that we leave with a zeal, a renewed zeal for how we exist in the healthcare ecosystem. But more importantly, we start to think about just the beauty of collaboration across the profession. How is it that we can kind of really amplify how we the many capacities we exist as a pharmacist and really showcase to the public, what you thought about community pharmacy, what you thought about pharmacists, you're wrong. Like, we are versatile, we are multifaceted, and we can come together and we can change the way that preventive healthcare looks.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself, honestly. And obviously, APHA presents as such a big opportunity to, have all these individual pharmacists in attendance throughout the weekend and discuss what's new and trending in pharmacy and ultimately just collaborate and communicate and educate each other to better improve patient outcomes. So, just to
Absolutely.
help, tie up our conversation on a more general note, could you briefly, discuss the importance to you of opportunities like APHA for pharmacist networking, collaboration, and education, and why is that important in your day-to-day work?
Thank you so much, Luke. I have a very, very selfish response to this. Well, first and foremost, I'm like I'm a pharmacist cheerleader. Like, there has never been a day that I have not been thankful to be a pharmacist. Being a pharmacist is the joy, is one of the biggest joys of my life. My husband would be upset if I named it as the ultimate joy of my life, but it is
There's
so
room for two.
rewarding. It's room for two. It's so rewarding. I love being a pharmacist. So that part of APHA, I love being around other folks that also love the profession. But for me, selfishly, like my story from APHA is it was actually I participated as one of the keynote panelists for the second general session at APHA in 2023, and it was in that session that CSL Seqirus, the funder of my community intervention, attended my MSO that I work with, Dr. Lillian Mofor. And following her attendance, she was moved by the work that we were doing, and she spoke to her colleagues at CSL, and that is what led to the sustained funding that we've had
Wow.
to our project. So that is one story of collaboration and really putting yourself out there and seeing how it shakes out. And for me, it not only shook out for a benefit to how I exist as a pharmacist, it has resulted in a lifelong friendship with me and Lillian, a lifelong collaborative partnership between us. It introduced me to amazing colleagues at CSL, but more importantly, the most important thing is it has allowed for us to do transformative things in the community that needed it. So I'm very thankful for APHA, and I hope that everybody has a story like that that they can take away, or even you being able to, find someone to support you through the trying times that we're navigating. But
Yeah.
APHA is a wonderful conference and a wonderful organization.
Yeah, no, that's a truly amazing story. I can't believe you were able to just it that just the coincidence of that just it worked out so
Right.
beautifully.
I take my elevator pitch everywhere. I'm like, listen, this is what I
Sold
got.
me. I'm sure you
Thank
sold the listeners as well. So thank you
you.
very much, Dr. Jam. Those were all the main questions I had for you today. Are there
Okay.
any final thoughts or advice for pharmacists listening who want to improve their RSV vaccination efforts, or just any final thoughts in general?
I guess my final thoughts would be, pharmacists, we can do it. We are such we're in such a unique place in the healthcare system, but more importantly, we play such an important role. When I think about preventive care, which is so important and really just an essential, place, we are the leaders there, when it comes to how we exist as clinicians. So I say, think about how you can collaborate with another pharmacist. that may be a little outside of the realm in which you exist. Really, I hope that's what they take from that presentation. When you look at how me and Dr. Dang exist as pharmacists, it's very different, but we come together all the time. I think this is maybe my fifth presentation with Richard, talking through RSV and how we navigate that. And then with me talking through the intervention and the wonderful collaboration that I have with my independent pharmacy colleagues, I hope that folks leave the conversation and start to think about, how can I exist? How can I exist differently, and how can I really push the boundaries on their current existence to really maximize patient outcomes?
Yeah, I mean, that's a beautiful way to put it. So, I mean, this was just all fantastic, Dr. Jam. Thank you so much again for taking the time out of, I'm sure, your busy schedule, preparing to go to LA and all, and just on top of that. So thank you again for joining us to discuss your presentation and APHA with me today. I really appreciate it. Like I've been promoting throughout, and we've been, the whole purpose of this, the presentation that Dr. Jam will be giving is on Saturday, March 28th at 6 a.m. Pacific time at APHA 2026 in Los Angeles. And Pharmacy Times will be on the ground to cover that session and many more throughout the weekend. So stay tuned to the website, pharmacytimes.com, and social media for our coverage. So thank you guys all for listening to this episode of Pharmacy Focus. Thank you, Dr. Jam, for being here. And we'll see you next time.
My absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.